You're listening to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, we'll hear about Wachula's Center for Great Apes, the Perez Art Museum Miami, Chef Norman Van Aken, and our Broward Arts Calendar. The world's premier modern and contemporary art show, Art Basel Miami Beach, hits South Florida like a hurricane next week, raising all artistic boats with its creatively influential storm surge. Here's contributor Judith Bishop to tell us more.
Art Basel Miami Beach. It's an annual extravaganza that captures the attention of the international art world. It's a global love fest of the arts, and it's right here in our backyard. A-list galleries from around the world compete for space and then fill their booths with the latest and most sought-after paintings, sculpture, graphics, and photography. Just wander through the Miami Beach Convention Center and experience a wonderland of color and creativity. Last year, over 50,000 people visited, and this year, expectations are high for even bigger crowds at the central event at the Convention Center and at satellite fairs that stretch from the beach to Wynwood to the Design District. All the major Miami museums participate by opening special exhibitions during the fair, and the social scene explodes with more parties than one could possibly attend. Here with us today to preview Art Basel from A to Z is Bob Goodman, publicist extraordinaire, who's represented Art Basel Miami Beach from day one, or as he puts it, from even before day one. Bob Goodman, thank you for joining us today on South Florida Arts Beat. Art Basel Miami Beach in its 12th year, and every year it just gets bigger and bigger and better and better. You've described it as similar to the Olympics or the Super Bowl of the art world, and I think that's really a good starting point for us today.
Thank you, Judy, and thank you, Ed Bell, for inviting me. I think this is probably the 12th year that I've come to your studios to be interviewed and talk about Art Basel, and it's always a pleasure. And I hope we can do it for a lot more years. Yeah, it's been called the Dom Perignon of the art world and the Super Bowl and the Olympics. And it's great that it's here in Miami Beach. I wanted to share with your audience that this past May, we launched Art Basel Hong Kong. So now the three fairs, different times of the year, are platforms for the contemporary modern art world to visit and see.
The scope is tremendous. How many exhibitors will there be, and how many pieces of art? Can you calculate that?
Well, I can't calculate the worth, but I've heard that it's in the billions with a B. It's approximately 260 galleries from all over the world, from South America to Europe and South Africa and Israel and just every continent for sure. And the pieces of art are equally international. Thousands and thousands of quality contemporary art pieces, from art video to sculpture and everything imaginable.
When one walks into the Miami Beach Convention Center, it's overwhelming. There's almost an abundance of riches. It's sort of like being at a buffet and you don't know where to start. Do you have any tips on how to navigate it? Should you circumnavigate and do concentric circles or go to the left or the right?
I have a terrible sense of direction, so I get lost very often when I'm on the floor. But I would just say that it is casual. People can come with the comfortable shoes. There are many venues that you might stop and have something to eat or drink. It's been a very wonderful experience to see how many families have started to come over the years that ordinarily probably would have not gone to a museum. We have thousands of students, both high school and college students, that have come to the fair, which is just great to expand their knowledge and their interest. So I would just say plan to spend the day. You can easily walk the fair in a day and not see everything. It's just a very nice day to go with someone you enjoy being with and just casually walk around. And don't be afraid to ask prices, because none of the art has price tags on them.
That's correct. I want to ask you a question. It's somewhat political. Do you believe that the convention center in Miami Beach is adequate for this? Would you like to see the new and improved version?
Yes, we would like to see a new and improved version. It's adequate, but you're driving your car and it might be 6 or 8 or 10 years old. It's adequate. It gets you where you want to go. But certainly a new, you know, luxurious car would make it more pleasant.
The work of many famous artists is going to be on view, and every year there's a number of standouts. What's going to be memorable this year? Any highlights?
Gee whiz, I couldn't tell you any one piece or anything like that. I know that over the years I've seen some things that I particularly found outstanding, and you just sort of don't know. Like you said before, Judy, it's a buffet, and you know, everyone has different tastes, and that's what makes it so exciting and interesting.
During the recession, I would imagine the art world, along with all other facets of our economy, took a hit. But it looks like we're bouncing back. So what are the expectations? Can you give us a dollar figure on how much might be sold?
I'm sure in the multi-millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. What's really interesting is to see how many visitors come to Miami Beach from all over the world to buy art. These are serious art collectors, and they acquire art that might be in their home, in their collection, in a museum. Your audience might see some very large pieces and say, who would ever buy that for their house? Well, it might be purchased for an office or a hotel or a large facility or place that you wanted to show art. So you never know what the purpose is, why people buy what they do. But again, it's like food or music. We all have different tastes.
That's so true. And speaking of different tastes, there's something for everyone at Art Basel. There's ancillary fairs, Art Miami, Scope, Pulse. Tell us a little bit about that.
What happened over the years as others, we call them satellite fairs, have come on scene. There's 20 now all around Miami Beach and Miami. And the visitors can, and the people that live here certainly can spend a day or more at Art Basel. And then while they're here, they might want to see some of the other art fairs. There's also some major art collections that are open to people to see: the Delacruz collection, Margulies collection, the Scholl collection, Rubel collection, Cisneros. These are major art collectors that have acquired art over their lifetime, and it's now on display at their facilities. And all of this can be found on our website.
And there's everything. There's sculpture, installations, photography, film and video. One film in particular is going to be Nan Golden and her life and her artwork. Where will that be shown?
It'll be at the Colony Theater. It is free and open to the public. It's a first come, first serve. And you're right, every year we do something called Art Film, and it's at the Colony Theater on Lincoln Road, Miami Beach.
And in addition, our museums, all the local museums, rev up, and they have special shows. Their highlight of the year coincides with Art Basel. Do you coordinate with them?
We coordinate, or let's say work in conjunction in promoting and providing information, but they all do this independently. I want to mention that the Perez Museum is scheduled to open a day before Art Basel, and we certainly are thrilled and excited about this new wonderful museum that will be opening. In addition to what you mentioned, I wanted to say that adjacent to the Bass Museum is Collins Park on Miami Beach. That's at 23rd and Collins. We will also be having some major installations there that we call Art Public. It's open to the public, and I think that it's certainly going to be worth anyone to come over and view and walk around the park. I think you'll really find it lovely.
That's a magical event there, to be on the beach and to have the art installations there. Magic is the Magic City, right? And
that's
it's
right.
Art Basel as well. What's the big takeaway when people give you feedback?
Well, those of us that live here and work here enjoy it and think it's great. But to the visitors that come from cold weather and places that where they've never seen pink buildings and palm trees, to see art displayed near the ocean and to be able to walk around in short sleeve shirts in the evening is very exciting. And they go back to their homes talking about it and taking pictures. So it's all good for them, and it's certainly wonderful for us.
An art tour and a tropical vacation all rolled into one.
Exactly.
Bob Goodman, thank you for joining us, and good luck with Art Basel this year.
The time went by too fast, Judy.
Always does.
Thank you.
Art Basel Miami Beach is open to the public from December 5th through the 8th. For more information, log on to artbasel.com or telephone 305-674-1292. For South Florida Arts Beat, this is Judith Bishop.
Judith Bishop is a television journalist who has covered breaking news, politics, and the arts for WABC, CNBC, and WNET. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will return in just a moment. It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, I'm Ed Bell. Later on our program, Judith Bishop gives us a preview of the opening of the Perez Art Museum Miami with their director, Tom Collins. Chef Norman Van Aken renders a word on food, and our Broward County Arts Calendar features Jody Horn-Leschinski. Founded in 1993 by Patty Reagan, the nonprofit Center for Great Apes is a sanctuary in Central Florida providing lifetime care for orangutans and chimpanzees in desperate situations. Way past the cute and cuddly stage when full grown, many of these apes are then retired from the entertainment world, research facilities, or as pets by their owners. Such was the case with Michael Jackson's pet chimpanzee, Bubbles. Their care per ape can cost as much as $19,000 a year. To help defray these extensive costs, the Center for Great Apes recently held its 20th anniversary celebration at Pinecrest Gardens. This benefit will help fund the care of 29 chimpanzees and 15 orangutans, providing care with dignity in a safe, healthy, and enriching environment. Another fundraising effort, Art for Apes, opens December 5th at the Miami Rum Club in the Wynwood Art District. The founder of the Center for Great Apes, Ms. Patty Reagan, joins us today to tell us more about this incredible effort. Ms. Patty Reagan, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Great to have you join us. Tell me, what is the mission of your sanctuary?
Well, our mission is basically to provide a permanent sanctuary for orangutans and chimpanzees, which are great apes, who have been rescued from biomedical labs, from entertainment circuses, basic entertainment, live entertainment movies, or from pet situations where they were purchased as infants, adorable, and then grew too large and too strong and had no place to go. So the sanctuary provides them with care, with dignity, in a safe, healthy, enriching environment, and lifetime care for these guys, which is a big challenge since they can live 50 to 60 years in captivity.
So why is your sanctuary necessary at all? Don't zoos take on this function?
Well, that's a really good question, and I volunteered many years at Metro Zoo, which is now Zoo Miami, as a docent and a board of directors member. And zoos will have one group of chimps that are, you know, pretty attached to each other, that know how to be chimps, know how to live together, and are one group of orangutans, maybe a pair, because usually not more than one big male. But we take animals that really don't have the social behavior to live with more natural chimpanzees or orangutans. And so animals, we rescued a 45-year-old male chimp that was captured in Africa just 2 years ago. We went up and got him in Ohio. He was captured as an infant 45 years ago and lived for his entire life, 4 decades, in a dark garage in about a 4x5 cage, no sunlight. He was emaciated when he got here. atrophied, could barely walk, bed sores on every joint. You cannot put that animal into a zoo group. And zoos have many different species of animals and are more about education and, you know, letting the public know about these animals. This is strictly animal welfare. This is providing these animals with some kind of future and care that gives them a chance with dignity and eventually living with their own species. And so this male, Clyde, has been introduced to an older female who was also wild-caught in Africa many years ago.
Wonderful. So please describe your Center for Great Apes, the whole facility.
Well, the facility is, I started with 15 acres. We now have 120 acres, but it's about a 25-acre wooded, heavily wooded area surrounded by 95 acres of orange groves around us. And we have habitats that are enclosed because we can't do open islands or open corral areas in the heavy woods. It just wouldn't be able to contain them. So our habitats are 30 and 40 feet tall. Some of them are 100 feet long. There's lots of space for them to. We have 16 different habitats. Some are geodesic domes. Some are larger than that for groups of chimps or pairs of orangutans. And then all of the habitats are connected with over a mile of an elevated aerial treetop runway that runs all through the woods. And it also connects to the veterinary clinic. So if anybody has to go see the vet for dental work or for a checkup, we don't have to crate them, knock them down, move them to a hospital. We just open the chute doors and they walk in the paths through the woods to get to the clinic, and then they run home. But it gives them lots of space. And the other thing about it, they are enclosures, which is what we can do in the woods. It is safe for them and safe for us. But there's a tremendous amount of space in these enclosures, and they rotate them so that we have 8 chimp enclosures and 8 orangutan habitats. And they can move from, oh, maybe a week over here, and then they move across the creek to another habitat. So it gives them more ability to do what they actually do in the wild, which is move through the woods and move to different habitat areas in the wild, and rather than sitting on one island or one spot. So that is an advantage of our treetop system. We have the orange groves outside, and we have plans eventually to move out into the orange groves with some 2-acre big open top running areas too, but that's in the future and takes money, so we're thinking it, but we'll plan it down the line.
Well, perhaps our listeners from Palm Beach County down to Monroe County, from Jupiter, Florida down to Key West, are wondering, well, what does this have to do about arts here in South Florida? Well, Patty, you have quite a history. You grew up here in South Florida, went to Ransom Everglades School and University of Miami, and we have just missed, unfortunately, your 20th anniversary at Pinecrest Gardens exhibit, but it still runs for free throughout December 30th. But you have Art for Apes exhibit coming up during Art Basel. Tell me a little bit more about that, because that includes artwork from your chimpanzees and orangutans.
It does. It has, for enrichment, our apes do a lot of different things, and sometimes it's just playing in water, or playing with tree branches and puzzles. But they also love to paint, to draw on the sidewalk with chalk, to draw with crayons. Well, the paintings that we've found that people love to have, and we, when they do that, we collect them. And there are several paintings in the Art Basel exhibit, which is at Miami Club Rum in the Wynwood area. And that's going to be December 5th, 6th, and 7th. And we've also had a wonderful contest called Endangered Art for Apes. And we had many entries, hundreds of entries from around the country on the theme of endangerment, whether it was an endangered animal, endangered environment, endangered plants, and it was a juried art show, and the winners of that show will also be exhibited in this Art Basel Week exhibit.
Do I understand that Romero Brito recently bought a piece by one of your great apes, Bubbles?
Yes, he did last year at the Art Basel show. We had a painting, and we have another one by Bubbles this year that's going to be in the show. Bubbles is probably our most famous chimpanzee resident. He was the famous chimp that Michael Jackson owned as an infant. And I think, you know, everybody's so interested in Bubbles because of the connection with Michael Jackson. What my message that I'd like to get across is he grew up to be a 180-pound huge orangutan. He's 28 years old now. He is the dominant male in his group of 7 and is finally behaving after years of rehabilitation more naturally like a chimp. But even the point I think that's important for people to understand, people still think Bubbles is that cute little pink-faced baby that Michael was holding in a lot of pictures. He loved him very much, but even the most popular and wealthy entertainer at the time could not manage Bubbles in a house situation after he was 5 or 6 years old, and he ended up having to send him to a breeder compound in an entertainer's backyard. He lived there for years until that trainer stopped using great apes in the business, chimpanzees and orangutans, in the business of entertainment, and we took all of his great apes at once in 2005, and Bubbles came with him. So he is a normal chimp, finally.
And doing very well at your Center for Great Apes. We also want to convey that your center is not open to the public, although you have a few days, and we want to talk about that event coming up soon, where you do let the public see the facilities. It does not receive any type of government funding and does not and will not breed or sell infant great apes.
The zoos, they do breed because they have family groups on exhibit, and they might trade with other zoos as they get older to maintain the genetic population. But there are private breeders who do breed full babies, sell them to entertainment and pet situations, although that's not happening as much as it did 20 years ago, which is one of the reasons that I founded this. The great apes are very, very attached to their mothers for 9 years. They nurse for 4 or 5 years in the wild. They stay with their mothers 8 or 9 years, and that's where they learn how to do all their normal interactions with others of their own species. So when you take a baby chimp at a month old and give it to a person to raise, and I volunteered to raise baby apes 20-some years ago, which is how I got into this, I know it's fun and it's a wonderful thing, but we can never give them what their own mothers can give them. So they get sold as pets or circus performers or Hollywood performers, and they have a shelf life of 5, 6, 7 years to be handled by people. So they're long decades ahead of their life. If accredited zoos won't take them, they're often ending up in really deplorable conditions. We've rescued apes from basements, from garages, from tiny little backyard cages, from trailer parks, and quite a few entertainment compounds and circus facilities. So it's a situation that I think people have to understand. Don't support movies and advertisements that use great apes to promote their product, because it may look wonderful, they may say they have a great life, but they have difficulty when they finally have to live with great apes that are adults, chimpanzees especially, who are so social, learning how to be chimps again. And very often, like Clyde, who we pulled out of this place in the Midwest, was really in deplorable condition.
Patty Reagan is our guest today on South Florida Arts Beat. She's the founder and executive director of the Center for Great Apes. And once again, December 5th through the 8th, there'll be an exhibition of some of the apes' paintings at the Miami Rum Club in Wynwood, 2320 North Miami Avenue in Miami. More information on their wonderful website, centerforgreatapes.org, on Facebook at Center for Great Apes, on Twitter at CFGA, and they have their own YouTube channel, Center for Great Apes. And Patty, thank you so much for joining us here on South Florida Arts Beat, and thank you so much for the wonderful work you're doing.
Well, thank you too, Ed. I appreciate the opportunity to tell you about it.
The Center for Great Apes will have their annual holiday open house Saturday, December 14th. You'll be able to stroll through the sanctuary and watch the apes and chimpanzees open their holiday gifts. There'll be an art show and sale of original artwork created by the orangutans and chimpanzees at the center, and much, much more. Please RSVP if you're interested by December 7th to RSVP at centerforgreatapes.org, or you can call 863-767-8903, extension 221. The Center for Great Apes is located at 1065 Maud Road in Wauchula, Florida. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue in just a moment. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, we'll welcome Norman Van Aken with a word on food and Jody Horn-Leschinski with our Broward Arts Calendar. Well, it's been years in the making, and now opening day is next week. It's quite an exciting time for South Florida's celebrated Perez Art Museum Miami, and our contributor Judith Bishop rejoins us with the details.
The new Perez Art Museum is set to open to the public on December 4th, pegged to Art Basel. The construction seems to be right on schedule, which is a major accomplishment when the scale is so grand and the public dialogue so intense. The actual construction took about 2.5 years. The museum raised over $220 million, $100 million from a bond issue, and a sizable chunk, about $25 million, from the Related Group developer, George Perez, a donation that won him naming rights to the new museum. The building replaces the old Miami Art Museum on Flagler. That building was vintage Spanish architecture designed by Philip Johnson. The new and improved version is designed by famous Swiss architects Herzog and de Meuron. Their elevated and cantilevered building is inspired by Stiltsville. It's both an homage to Miami history and a calculated move to elevate the art in case of hurricanes and flooding. The Perez Art Museum has a prime location near the AAA Arena and the new Frost Science Museum. The views are spectacular, and to maximize the panorama, there are large decks and vertical gardens with tropical plants suspended from trellises. The construction project evolved under the watchful eye of museum director Tom Collins. He comes to Miami from the Neuberger Museum of Art in Westchester County, and he is our guest today on South Florida Arts Beat. Tom Collins, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat. I think the savvy art lovers in Miami certainly know your name and your affiliation with the new Perez Museum, but I bet you they don't know a whole lot about your background. So let's start with you and your CV.
Sure. Well, I come to Miami. I arrived about three and a half years ago. My most recent position, I was director of the Neuberger Museum of Art in New York, which is a modern and contemporary art space in Westchester County. I began my career after graduate school at the Museum of Modern Art and have sort of worked my way across the country as a curator and a director.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here in Miami, especially at this particular time. You certainly scored a big coup winning this job. You've been here 3.5 years supervising the construction. You were literally in on the ground floor. It's kind of like being in the delivery room when the baby is born. What were the biggest challenges you had to face during this startup and construction phase?
Well, you know, actually, it's been a surprisingly painless construction phase. So I arrived at about 60% of the design development. So the basic program was set, and I loved it, of course, or I wouldn't have made the journey down here. And the actual construction process has, as I said, been fairly painless. We've had great weather, which was one of our concerns, but we remain at this point on our original schedule to open the first week of December.
That in itself is remarkable.
Yes.
Describe for us what the museum looks like.
Well, one of the most interesting things about this design is the fact that a big part of the inspiration came from the architect's experience of Stiltsville. So the building is, in fact, inspired by the Stiltsville form. It is elevated above the ground on stilts. Three stories of space above those stilts stretch between an enormous wraparound deck on the first floor and an enormous overhanging louvered roof, which shelters the entire property. And the inspiration has various dimensions to it. But, of course, part of it was simply the fact that we're collecting important cultural materials. And like much of Miami, we're on a floodplain. So the idea was, like the Stiltsville houses, to get us high above any kind of tidal flow that might threaten the museum. The second inspiration really had to do with the idea that we wanted to create a space where people felt comfortable gathering outside, a new kind of public space, whether they come into the museum or not. That huge wraparound deck on the first floor is free and open to the public. And on that deck, one is protected from the elements, protected from the sun, protected from the rain, but able to have an experience, an immediate experience of the park, of the bay, and of the city skyline in immediate proximity to the collections and exhibitions.
So incorporating the Bay View was a big, big part of this design as well. How about inside? How many floors? How many galleries?
Well, it's the building's enclosed space is about 140,000 square feet. That deck is over 30,000 square feet. So it's an enormous amount of space, which we can use for programming, sculpture installation, performance, and so forth out on the bay. And then, as I said, three floors of enclosed space between that deck and the roof. The first two floors are principally exhibition spaces. We have, of course, a restaurant and a shop and so forth on that first floor as well. But the galleries themselves are remarkable. They're very generous spaces. They are spaces that are organized in a very progressive way. This is not your traditional series of galleries that unfolds in a kind of linear narrative, but rather they're clusters of differently scaled spaces that interlock in very unusual ways. And we talk about this as progressive because if you think about the traditional approach to exhibition design, museum design, it really insists upon a kind of linear narrative, one approach to storytelling. And the way our architects, Herzog and de Meuron, have organized the exhibition spaces, they insist on a kind of polyvocal approach to storytelling. And as we say to everyone, if there were ever a community that demanded a polyvocal approach to storytelling in a public institution, an art institution, this would be the place.
Well, I know the architects spent a lot of time here and absorbed the culture and the surroundings, and that's how they came up with the Stelzfeld plan. So it's nice to know that they took that into consideration in making the design. There are two elements, I think, that make a world-class museum. One is the building, the physical space, and the second is what's in it. And I am sure that you and the others have been stung a few times by some of the criticism of the current permanent collection and the new Perez collection.
Yes.
So how do you answer your critics?
Well, first of all, this is an institution that's only been collecting a little bit over a decade, right? We're a very young institution, and of course, this is a young city. So at this point, we have about 1,800, a little over 1,800 objects in our permanent collection that have been acquired in a very thoughtful, very considered way. So this has actually been a bit of a benefit, right? We have been able to build collections that we're really going to be able to use. So there's not a lot of chaff in there. There's a lot of wheat. And those collections have been built, I think, very intelligently through gift and purchase to enable us to tell stories that we think are going to be particularly relevant to our audiences here in Miami-Dade. And so I think that people will see when they visit our permanent collection installations, for example, that there is actually a real richness of material there. And I think that most of our audiences, our local audiences, are going to see aspects of their own lives, of their own personal experiences, and in this very uniquely diverse city, in those collections, in those materials, and in the way that we present them, the way we're telling stories there. So I think quite a bit of this will be put to rest in the first 2 years. The first 2 years, the plan is to present permanent collection materials with some significant loans made by our great local collectors to tell a series of stories about the relationship between art production in North America and South America and the Caribbean in the period after the Second World War. And we're telling those stories through thematic installations. So it's 12 thematic installations that will change over the course of these 2 years. And I think that it will be the kind of presentation that is both engaging for an art-interested but not necessarily art-knowledgeable audience. But I also think, insofar as we've committed ourselves to really indexing our exhibitions and our collection development on the unique demographics of this community, if we do what we set out to do, it will also look from the outside to people in the quote-unquote art world as a really kind of progressive model for a North American museum.
You, during your fundraising, set aside money for new acquisitions. What kind of specific stories do you want to tell in the future with those acquisitions? What direction exactly are you going in?
Well, just to be clear, that we actually, our mission is, with regard to collecting, is to collect modern and contemporary art, so 20th century art and art of the present moment from around the world. But when I talk about being uniquely responsive to the demographics of this community and the interests and sort of cultural influences that are so relevant here, I'm really talking about weighting things more heavily towards the Americas, for example, than they are weighted in other North American institutions. Certainly, the Caribbean is a big focus of interest for the curatorial staff. And as we create exhibitions and build collections, I think that will become more clear. But at our opening, we have a whole series. We have 9 exhibitions when we open. Of those exhibitions, one is a large survey of work by the Chinese artist Ai Weiwei. So, of course, you know, very important international artist. And we have 4 new commissions of work that were created by artists from outside of the Americas. So they were invited to Miami, and they've been asked to make work that in some way responds to their experience here. We've commissioned works by artists, 4 artists, one from Poland, one from Scotland, one from Israel, and one from Morocco.
Diversity and international art comes to Miami in a big way at your opening.
We're really trying to both showcase cultural ideas and particularly hybrid ideas that are immediately relevant here in Miami, but also to bring ideas from other parts of the world into this community and to ask people with very different perspectives to respond to what they discover here in Miami.
Well, good luck to you and to the museum, which opens during Art Basel. Thank you so much, Tom Collins, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
The new Perez Art Museum is located at 1103 Museum Drive. That's right off Biscayne Boulevard in downtown Miami near the AAA Arena. It will be open every Tuesday through Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Thursdays, the museum will stay open until 9 p.m., and it's closed on Monday. Free admission every Thursday and every second Saturday of the month. For more information, log on to PAMM.org or telephone 305-375-3000. For South Florida Arts Beat, this is Judith Bishop.
We'll be back with more South Florida Arts Beat exclusively on WLRN right after these messages. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the aus and fade, with shafafa on the side. Shoo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food is chicken fricassee. A dramatic rainstorm was rolling through the lower Florida Keys as we tried to decide what to make for breakfast the day after our granddaughter Audrey's first birthday. My daughter-in-law, Lourdes, wisely poured some freshly squeezed orange juice and put some of her homemade banana bread in the toaster to stave off the equally volatile storms of unquenched thirsts or insatiable appetites. Propelled and honestly worsened by our practice of morning cafe con leches. Our family's meal planning is the center of our conversations, the way some families go on about sports, politics, or the weather. Luckily, we had her birthday party on a much sunnier yesterday. Soon, we'd be heading back to Miami, but first, we decided, a family lunch would be a fitting finale to the celebratory weekend. The sound of tires splashing through puddles was a soothing one as we sat in the soft light of the small Cuban breakfast joint called El Mocho on this bit of rock called Stock Island. The rained out of a day's work house painters, carpenters, and towing service guys surrounded the small tables, set with the barest of essentials, to accommodate the home-styled fare the owners of this eatery have been serving the working-class people on the island nearest Key West for years. The neighborhood is more trailer parks than homes. Life working in the fishing industry means pouring a lot of money in a boat, after all. The Hogfish Bar is the busiest place on Stock Island, with shrimpers and the wealthier land-based folks residing west of US 1 enjoying the vibe equally. There is one table out front of the open double doors of El Mocho. It is for the folks who want service outside, where the banana trees are in full flower. No one was sitting there on the morning I ordered chicken fricassee. A skin-on, bone-in, meaty bird was served after having been perfectly braised in a rich chicken stock alongside not only rice and caramelized plantains, but a full-to-the-brim bowl of perfectly cooked white beans to pour on top of that rice. Ham bits bobbed into view as the beans spread along and down the white mound of the rice. One cannot complain about a lack of starch in the fare at El Mocho. A fricassee is defined as a stew, usually chicken, that has been sautéed in butter and served with vegetables. Vegetables were not so much in evidence, but I took solace in the plantains. Another defining part of fricassee is that it is a braise that requires no initial browning, and it's softer, not quite white. A more golden hue is sought after. There are recipes for this dish dating back to a medieval French cookbook from 1300. Historians of the more recent Civil War era inform us that chicken fricassee was one of Abraham Lincoln's most beloved dishes. When my son Justin and I wrote our cookbook together, we included a recipe slightly different from the one I enjoyed at El Mocho. Our love of more pronounced seasonings and flavors required it. We go about making the simple braise, but we finish it with a punch of chilies, unsparingly for the two of us, olives, zest of lemon, and capers. Before I paid the bill, I watched, with deep satisfaction, little Audrey chewing Maduro plantains as she sat on her grandmother's lap. We left El Mocho filled with delicious memories of first birthdays and chicken fricassee. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of My Key West and is also the director of restaurants for the Miami Culinary Institute and Tuyo in downtown Miami. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Menudo. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And today we say hello to Jody Horn-Leschinski, assistant director of the Broward Cultural Division. Great to have you back with us, Jody.
Well, thank you, and I hope that everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday.
Me too, and tell us about all of that excitement in Broward County.
Well, Broward Cultural Division has created a Friends of Public Art group, and next Tuesday at 6:30, we invite you to an event at Florida Atlantic University's Metro Lab featuring Barbara Derricks, who works at a 147-year-old firm by the name of Derricks Glass Studios. And for more than a century, the company, which is based in Germany, has been collaborating with artists and architects worldwide to create exciting and colorful large-scale glass installations. Ms. Derricks will talk about the varied techniques used to create architectural art glass and show images of magnificent projects and describe the distinct process adopted by Derricks Glass Studios. Space is definitely limited, so please RSVP at broward.org/arts. This Sunday at 5 p.m. at La Solis Riverfront, you are invited to meet the artist of Gator in the Bay. Lloyd Gorodetsky will be there during an official ribbon-cutting ceremony. Gator in the Bay is a large-scale, floating public artwork composed of 104 4-foot by 8-foot floating art tiles. And this will travel down the Intercoastal and be on exhibit at Art Basel to bring awareness to the Florida Everglades and water preservation. It's really something to see. It's like this giant alligator head floating down the river. Laughing Matters returns to the Broward Center for another hilarious season every Thursday through Sunday starting at 7 p.m. You first enjoy a delicious meal and a performance of original satirical songs and creative skits. Do you and the kids like monster trucks? Well, if you do, then you will not want to miss the Museum of Discovery and Science's Mini Monster Truck Weekend now through Sunday. During this fun-filled event, you can take a ride in a real monster truck, watch Kid KJ demonstrate some monster truck tricks, and get a close-up look at the monster trucks in the collection. The Museum of Art Fort Lauderdale has commissioned 4 art installations for the exterior of its building, the largest being a 30 by 50 foot mural by internationally known Venezuelan painter Arturo Herrera, and that graces the Bernard and Miriam Peck Terrace. Other artists include Jen Stark and husband and wife team Roberto Bejar and Rosario Marquardt, each who have designed installations that enliven the three sides of the museum's Edward Larrabee Barnes-designed modernist structure. The installations will be on view until the end of 2013. The Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival's year-round film art house in downtown Fort Lauderdale has now expanded to a Cinema Paradiso in Hollywood. This weekend, enjoy two love-themed films, Mother of George, the tale of a young girl's trip from Nigeria to Brooklyn to marry the man of her dreams, but encounters mother-in-law of her nightmares. And that will be playing at the Fort Lauderdale venue. Blue is the Warmest Color will be viewed at the Hollywood location, and that centers on a 15-year-old girl named Adele who is approaching adulthood and dreams of experiencing her first love, but never expected who that love would turn out to be. The Museum of Discovery and Science AutoNation IMAX 3D Theater presents The Hunger Games Catching Fire now through December 10th. Symphony of the Americas presents Serenades at Sunset featuring Crosstown Quartet on Sunday, with a reception beginning at 5:30 p.m. and a performance at 6 p.m. at the Hyatt Regency Pier 66 in Fort Lauderdale. If you would like more detailed cultural event information, please visit artscalendar.com, Broward County's complete guide to the arts. Never miss a thing. Get there.
Great event suggestions from Jody Horn-Leshinsky, Assistant Director at the Broward Cultural Division. Thanks for all of those ideas, Jody.
Oh, you're welcome, and happy holidays to you, Ed.
Happy holidays, and we'll be back in touch in a matter of weeks.
All right, looking forward to it.
And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer. Special thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, and our contributors, Judith Bishop, Norman Van Aken, and Jody Horn-Leshinsky. Call us with your comments, 305-995-2258. You can also fax us your event information, 305-995-2221, or email it to us at info@wlrn.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, we'll feature topical currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great holiday weekend, and please, as always, keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.